Englandy. This is the moment the crowd have waited for. Just look at him go.
Congratulations, Catherine, on your wonderful performance in winning the gold medal in the 400 metre event of the Commonwealth Games.
Ian Thorpe really going for it. 3:40.17. This is absolutely amazing.
Tracy Wickham, a great world record here in Edmonton, and there it is, a world record.
The Diamonds Commonwealth drought has broken.
The hockey revolution has a golden uprising.
Adam Ayres, congratulations, and a games record. Adam Ayres has got a hat-trick of gold medals at the Commonwealth Games.
This is something to savour, something to remember for the rest of your life.
Get set, Australia. Welcome to Gold Coast Gold. Here's your host, Dave Colbert.
Hello and welcome to our 21st birthday edition of Gold Coast Gold. I'm David Colbert. This week and for the next few weeks, we're going to enjoy a legend series where we go back in time and hear from the greats of Commonwealth Games past. And we're starting with Raelene Boyle, who this week was elevated to legend status of the Sport Australia Hall of Fame. We'll hear from Raelene shortly about her memories from her four Commonwealth Games and, of course, her golden swan song 35 years ago in Brisbane. But before we speak with Raelene, as we count down with just 24 Fridays to go to the Gold Coast Games, let's take a look at the headlines from another big week in Commonwealth Games news. We start with the Artistic Gymnastics World Championships in Montreal. It was a wonderful result for Queensland's Georgia Godwin, who reached the all-around final and placed 13th, seven places higher than her 20th position in qualifications. The best men's result came from Clay Stevens, who finished 14th on vault. Unfortunately, Stevens fell on the final tumbling line in his floor routine, and scans revealed a ruptured anterior cruciate ligament, and he'll be out of action for 6 to 12 months, which means, of course, that he will miss the Commonwealth Games. A huge blow for Clay and for our men's team. In athletics, Paralympic legend Kurt Fearnley has finished second in the Chicago Marathon wheelchair category for the second straight year. Fellow Australian Madison De Rosario finished fourth in the women's wheelchair race in a huge personal best time of 1 hour 39 minutes and 22 seconds. In the elite runners category, reigning Commonwealth Games gold medalist Michael Shelley finished 10th and Delhi bronze medalist Lisa Waitman finished 6th in the women's event. Meanwhile, South African 400-metre world record holder Wade van Niekerk has given Games organisers a big boost by confirming he definitely plans to compete on the Gold Coast. The South African wants to concentrate on the 100 and 200 metres in 2018, meaning he'll not compete in the 400, the distance at which he is the Olympic and world champion and also holds the world record. Van Niekerk's the only man in history to have gone sub 10 seconds for 100, sub 20 seconds for 200 and sub 44 seconds for 400. In netball, the Diamonds are back in business, having secured the Constellation Cup with a 55-43 win in the third test in Adelaide. They bounced back from their 10-goal loss to the Kiwis in last month's quad series, and of course they took the first two legs in New Zealand. In lawn bowls, Bowls Australia has named 28 players across senior development and para sport teams for next month's Trans-Tasman Test Series. The event on the Games rink at Broadbeach is the final international event before the Commonwealth Games. Seven women and six men will be trialled for the Games team, with those numbers likely to be culled to five for the Games. The team includes Jackaroos captain Lindsay Clark, reigning Australian Open singles champion Alan Ryan, 2012 world champion Rane Rudiger, and two-time Games representative Nathan Rice. Selectors have also named five players with two vision-impaired directors for the two para sport disciplines. Following the event, the Gold Coast 2018 athletes will be ratified and announced by Commonwealth Games Australia later in the year. In hockey, Victoria won both the men's and women's Australian Hockey League titles, with the Victorian Vipers and Vikings emerging victorious for the first time in the state's history. The Victorian Vipers women's team beat Queensland 2-1 in a shootout at Perth Hockey Stadium before the Vikings defeated Queensland 3-0. To defend the men's crown. Meanwhile, the Kookaburras and Hockeroos are currently in action in the Oceania Cup against New Zealand and Papua New Guinea in Sydney. In cycling, Cycling Australia has unveiled a new high-performance strategy with a major concentration on medals on offer in the track program. New high-performance boss Simon Jones confirmed the target is 8 gold medals at next year's Games. Australia's track cycling focus next year will be on the Commonwealth Games, and it's going to send a token skeleton squad to the World Championships, which are just 6 weeks before the Gold Coast. In volleyball, new pairing Taliqua Cansey and Mariana Atache de Solo has struck gold in their first major tournament together in the beach volleyball. The pair went to the Osaka Open to trial a new partnership ahead of the Commonwealth Games selections. The duo defeated Clancy's Rio partner Louise Borden, who partnered with Jess Nagumo on the way to the win. No decision has been made on the pairings for the three compulsory Commonwealth selection events in Australia. Congratulations to a number of members of the Commonwealth Games family who were celebrated at the Sport Australia Hall of Fame inductions and award evening. Commonwealth Games gold medalists Steve Hooker and Brad McGee were inducted into the Hall of Fame, as was Team Medical Director Dr. Grace Bryant. Commonwealth Youth Games gold medalist Riley Day received a Hall of Fame scholarship, and as we mentioned at the beginning of this week's show, Raylene Boyle was elevated to legend status, and we'll speak to Raylene shortly. And finally, chef de missions from 70 nations and territories gathered on the Gold Coast for a five-day seminar as they continue their preparation for next year's Games. The seminar served as a key opportunity for Gold Coast Commonwealth Games organisers and the Commonwealth Games Association to receive information regarding Games Village, transport, anti-doping, security and competition arrangements, including tours of the Games venues. Gold Coast 2018 Chairman Peter Beattie and Chief Executive Mark Peters have also presented their plans for the opening and closing ceremony to the Commonwealth Games Federation. Meanwhile, sponsor Longines have unveiled a countdown clock at Brisbane Airport to mark 175 days to go to the Games. And that's this week's Commonwealth Games News.
Kick off our Legend Series on Gold Coast Gold with one of the best, one of my favourites, Raylene Boyle. Seven-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist, four Commonwealth Games, three Olympic silver medalists, a national living legend, and as was announced this week, a legend of Australian sport. Raylene, thanks for being my first subject, my first victim on the Legend Series.
First victim? I'm very honoured, actually, to be the first victim. Thanks, David. You give me confidence.
What a career. And it's in moments like this week when you're being elevated to legend of the Sport Australia Hall of Fame, do you think back on everything that's occurred in your glorious life?
Look, I think what really happens with stuff like that, what is going to happen, is that you do reflect on the past. I don't think about my running very much. I don't think about that life. I think about the things it taught me, but I don't reflect on it often enough. And I have spent a bit of time in my office in the last couple of months since I've known, looking at pictures of me as an athlete and trying to relate to that person, because I'm an old woman now. I'm a very different person to that person. But the significant thing and the important thing, I think, is I live by the lessons I learnt in that period of time in my life.
Is there a picture you look at that you like the most?
Yeah, one of my mates who used to own Trent Nathan, actually, Shane Barr, he gave me a photograph of myself on the dais after I won in Brisbane. And underneath it, there's a button. You push the button. It actually is Tim Lane's call of the race. And I listened to that a few times, and I haven't done that for years. The only time I listen to it is if someone new comes to my house and they want to have a look around, and I show it to them. But it brought tears to my eyes. It was like I almost can't relate to the time, the effort, the training, the whole emotion of being able to cope with walking out onto the track in front of that crowd and deliver the goods. It's a very strange feeling.
We'll jump around a bit, as we tend to do, because I've got a whole stack of talking points, but your answers will deliver me a different question. My favourite is your crossing the line in Brisbane as a school kid who set up the TV in the gymnasium to watch that race. But do you look back at the 17-year-old Raylene Boyle? What a gazelle. What a gazelle you were.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I had a father who didn't believe in working me hard in the early days of my sport. For that 17-year-old that went to Mexico, I thought Mexico was a couple of hours away on the plane. I didn't realise the injections and the checkups and everything you had to have before you went. I trained for 3 hours, I trained for three quarters of an hour for 3 months every week for that Games. I didn't do a lot of training, and I went over there and I guess proved my father's theory that I had a gift, that I could run fast. And it was there that set me off into the direction of desire, I think, and made me want more. And so I came back from those Games wanting a gold medal, not another silver.
Jesse Owens described you as having the greatest technique he'd ever seen of any athlete. That's not a bad compliment, given how smooth a mover he was. Unique style that Jesse had, but what a compliment.
I was lucky enough to meet Jesse. Then he requested a meeting, and we sat down and we spoke for a long time about how you covered the ground. Movement across the ground made a difference to speed across the ground. And his style was probably like it was because he ran on cinders. So he had a more upright style, whereas the athletes of today can risk moving in any leaning form, backwards, forwards, and they can still run fast because they've got the security of the harder track. But yeah, we had a lovely time. It was probably one of the greatest honours of my life meeting him. This little black fella that was introduced to me had a cigarette in one hand, bald head, a bit like you, Dave, bald head. But his eyes lit up when we started talking about speed over the ground, covering the ground well.
We share a long jump PB, Jesse and Owens and I, 8.13. He did his in 1936 and I did mine in 1988, so he was a bit before his time, that's for sure. Let's go back to growing up as a young girl in Coburg, not too far from Pentridge Prison with brothers. And you mentioned your dad and his theories on sport and etc. What it was the perfect background to grow up in a sporting family.
When I was growing up, we didn't have television till I was five. My father listened to my race in Mexico on the radio. It was a different life. We played cricket in the street. We kicked footies around the street. I was out there with the blokes doing just as well as them. We played cowboys and Indians. The lake at Coburg was a good, fun place. Pentridge Jail, a lot of people are surprised I didn't end up in there, but it was a male jail. It was a good life. It was a quiet life. There were not as many cars on the road. We could do stuff. We had freedom. We could go out and meet our mates and ride for kilometres on our bikes to see them, whereas these days parents are a bit scared letting kids do that. I had a good life, even though it was Coburg and it's not the most salubrious area to grow up in. And sadly, later on in my life, I fell out with my family and left home. I was asked to leave home. And the father who did so much for me in the early days, he and I actually never got back together again as father-daughter. He dropped dead at 50 and I was about 22 when he died, or 21. So it was sad, but I did have a really good, fun early day with a lot of freedom.
Your brother competed for Australia at the Olympics in cycling. Was that ever something that you contemplated?
Cycling? There was no cycling for women at the Olympics, but probably if there was cycling for women, I probably would have been a cyclist more than a runner, because that's what we were brought up with. We were involved with a club called the Pedal Club, and we were mad competitors for that, all the three of us. And I was very successful in it. I don't think anyone ever beat me in anything at Pedal Club, but I probably would have been a sprint cyclist if cycling was around for women.
And your father was your first coach?
Yeah, Dad was my first coach. He was a professional sprinter in his day, and he had very certain ideas and concepts about how it was done. And I think probably a lot of it was right, and it suited me, because so much of pro running was about style and form. And I used to train with a bloke by the name of Steve Ward at Coburg Footy Ground, and he wasn't a bad pro runner, but he had a beautiful running style. And of course you tend to copy or mimic the person you're running with, and he had a big long stride. And in the early days of my running, I think I did have a longer stride than towards the end, when injuries and age were catching up with me.
And how did you come to meet who was the coach for the majority of your career, Ron Dewhurst, who's an amazing guy? Must have only been a very young man when he was coaching you in your prime. How did that come about?
Ronnie, I had a couple of coaches in the interim. I went from Dad to an Auntie Dot walk in Hampton. I lived with her family, in fact. Then I went from Auntie Dot to Shirley Strickland in Perth. We were an enormous clash of personalities. It only lasted up to the 76 Olympics. It was a very short union, but it was probably the hardest period of time that I'd ever trained. We were doing 7.5 hours work a day for the 18 months leading up to those games. How my body put up with it, I don't know. And then, after I pulled out of... after 76 and the disappointment of breaking twice and all of that rubbish that went on, I knew I had to do something about moving, probably back to Melbourne, where life was a bit tougher and I had a bit more pressure on me. And then I had to try and find someone to coach me. I talked to a lot of people, and Ronnie Dewhurst's name kept coming up. I approached Ronnie. He wasn't really sure that he wanted to take on somebody who'd had the success I had. He had responsibilities to the rest of his training group. And we spent a lot of time together at a Perth National Championships, a few days, where we drank together, we talked together, we laughed together, we cried together. We did all sorts of stuff. And he, in the end, decided that, yes, he would risk it and take me on. I can remember that Max Binnington wasn't happy. He was in the same group. He was an Olympic high hurdler. Max wasn't at all happy that Ron was taking me on because he felt the rest of the team would suffer because Ron's focus would be very much on me and not the rest of the guys. And we talked all those things out, and they worked. And, in fact, the troop got together and were a stronger bond sometime after I started because many of them focused on my career. They were inter-club athletes, not Olympic athletes. And it all just worked. And it was a great bond. Ronnie was a year younger than me. He was a corporate man, businessman, smart, intelligent man. And, you know, Ronnie probably not only that last gold medal and that those training experiences, but probably from a life experience, he gave me so much that I don't see the coaches giving their athletes these days. He prepped me very well for retirement. He encouraged me to buy a home and start renovating it. He encouraged me to buy a pet because I wasn't married and it wasn't likely I would get married. I bought a dog. And so I had things before I finished running and I had things for after I finished running that joined it together. And outside of on the track where he worked me hard, we had a good bond of having a meal and a glass of wine and talking out life.
This is obviously focusing on the Commonwealth Games, but you can't talk to Raylene Ball without talking about the Olympics and, you know, what from that very first Games, Wyoming attire. So would have loved to have been in a race with her. That was your first Olympic in the 100 where you finished fourth and broke the world junior record, silver medal in 68. And then, of course, 72 where you're pretty much at the peak of your powers along with 76, carried the flag. Do you look back on those races, the silver medals at the Olympics, fondly? Do you look at it with bitterness? Do you look at it with satisfaction?
Look, I don't look back at any of it with bitterness because it was just a great time in my life. I don't think I ever went into a race wanting to come second, though. And second, to me, meant that I hadn't actually achieved what I set out to do. And in many ways, that encouraged me on to the next Games. Because while I had youth and while I had that teaser of silver medals, I wanted a gold. I wish some of the tennis players of today would appreciate that, you know, having talent is one thing, but having talent and being successful is another thing. And a lot of these kids have got so much talent, but they're not actually showing any mental capacity to move forward. They're happy with their lot. But I always wanted a gold medal. I'm not unhappy now in life that I didn't get one. If I had it, I'd love it. But it actually showed me lots of things in life, that you can set out to be the best in the world at something and not make it. It doesn't mean you're a failure. And a lot of the lessons you learn from not actually achieving your goals, if you let them be learned, are far better from coming second than winning. I don't know what I mean by that in many ways, but for a long time, I think I saw myself as a bit of a failure for winning silver medals. But, as life's gone by, I realised that I actually achieved a lot. And because of the fact that I kept my nose to the grindstone, was happy to keep moving forward and trying to win that gold medal, I got an awful lot out of it. And I do think a lot of that transferred across to when my health went down the gurgler, that I had the ability to cope and move forward with all of that.
We're with Raylene Boyle on our Legend Series for Gold Coast Gold. There's always a question mark. We always talk about the question mark of who won, particularly in 72 with Renata Stecker. Do you talk about it as much, do you think about it as much as we all do, and how, you know, this is 1972, the same things are happening in 2017 where you're watching Olympics or a World Championships and you see a winner and you go, I don't think that's right. Is that what you thought at the time?
I think it actually spoiled sport for me, the fact that there are a lot of drugs around. People are cheating to win. And I feel sorry for the athlete who is talented and gifted and should be the winner of that particular medal situation, whatever. And like you, I watch it. And I found it very hard in the commentary box with Bruce, because I look down and I see so many examples of the wrong person winning. But as time went by, it wasn't only the person winning, it was the person coming last in those fields that were also cheating. So it wasn't an even playing field, or wasn't it? I don't know. I know in my day it probably wasn't an even playing field, even though Renata Secca denies being involved in any performance-enhancing program. It's all documented in the Stasi files. Because it affected my life, I am able to go in and get her file, which I've done with Richard Carlton. From 60 Minutes. I know what she did. There's a museum in Germany now dedicated to the whole situation with the East and the West, when the wall went up and what happened behind the scenes and when it came down. And in the sports section, there's a drawer that can be pulled out, and inside it, it's got Oral Turinabol. Wasn't on the banned list by the IOC. Who let me down? The IOC? Or should I just shut up and not care about the other athletes who missed medals that should have had medals? I mean, Lisa Curry should have won a silver medal. Lisa Curry, hasn't got any Olympic medals. I feel sorry for her. At least I've got something out of it. It was a terrible time in sport. And I hate a dictatorship like that where you actually have no choice about what you do. I believe that we are so lucky in Australia. We have freedom. We can make choices. And I think that's why some of the athletes that I know in Australia that have taken stuff, I get disappointed in them. And I haven't got a lot of time for them. I am very black and white. And they know, even though some of my best friends also, Susie Howlands, cheated. She used to say to me, if I don't, I'm going to get nowhere. But yeah, it was a tough time for sport. And it just discoloured the Olympic rings a bit for me.
Sadly, not much has changed all those years later. Let's lighten the mood and talk about the Commonwealth Games, where, you know, winning was your signature thing. Seven gold medals from 1970 at the first Games, 100, 200 and relay. Defending those titles in 1974, 1978, second in the 100, and then 1982, where that famous 400 metres. What are your recollections and memories of the Commonwealth Games as a whole?
Well, as a whole, I don't think they're quite the competition they were in the early days of my Commonwealth career. There are only two major events for us back in 70 when I went to Edinburgh. One was the Olympics, and then 2 years later was the Commonwealth Games. Then you waited for the Olympics again. In 83, the World Champions came into play. I'm not sure when the World Indoor Champions came into play. I don't regard them as a significant event anyway. The world of European travel to different meets wasn't around quite to the same. There was a little bit of it, and certainly the meets that you could go to. I don't think it's quite the same in America, but there used to be significant events you could go to in the States, and indoors in particular. The Commonwealth Games were a big deal back then, and I thoroughly enjoyed competing them. They weren't easy. I had Alice Annam in my first Games from Ghana. She ran me to the line and didn't make it easy for me, and I still ran significant times. I think I ran about 22.7 in the 200 metres, which was the same time that I won a silver medal for in the Olympics from. They're a warmer competition. It's a much more friendly, happy, less chilling event to walk out into the stadium for. Mind you, in saying that, the pressure I was under in Brisbane was pretty significant.
That's not your dog, is it? Let's go straight to that. 35 years ago, this week, 35 years ago.
4th of October.
Yeah, well, it's the decision to go to the 400 metres in the first instance.
I was stupid. I hated that event. And I even hated the training more. It was tough. And one of the things that I really disliked about it most was it took that excitement of that upper level speed out of my legs. And that's what I lived on. That's what I loved. I loved that real speed of movement, the flicking of the feet off the ground and the, you know, that last kick of a knee lift where it just went that little bit higher, and, you know, the arm swing where you just got that little extra inch out of it that actually took you to a longer stride, to a faster movement over the ground, to the whole lot of it. My brain works in a very different way when I start thinking about sprinting, running fast. It all went really with the 400 metres. It was salvaging as much of that as I could with being able to be a long sprinter and go that extra yard. And boy, I messed it up a lot. One of the fears was that I would be tempted to run out too fast, which I did in a lot of races, and have nothing left to walk home with. Even trying to run or think about run was impossible. But, you know, walking home up the home straight was viable because of the way my brain worked.
Did you have a chat to your great friend Betty Cuthbert about it? Because, you know, she started off as a 100 and 200 metre runner, Olympic champion, of course, and then she came back in the 400 in that magnificent, you know, her final Olympic victory. Did you seek counsel from someone who'd been there and suffered the pain of the 400?
No, I didn't really talk. I mean, it would have been would be lovely to say, yes, I went to Betty and asked her, but no, Betty and I were friends. We didn't really talk about running. I didn't really seek counsel. It was the only alternative I had. I was past the sprinting. I might have won a medal. I would have made the final. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to win the last race. And the only option I had was to go up to the four and see how I went. I went and spoke to my doctor, my surgeon, Howard Toyne. You'd remember Toyney. I went and knocked on his door one night and had a couple of red wines with him and told him what I was going to do, and he told me I was a bloody idiot, that I was too old and my legs were too fragile. But he said he'd support me. He would, you know, if anything went wrong, he'd be there to fix it. Which a lot of my friends didn't do. A lot of people in my life said, you're an idiot, why are you doing it? Get out of it. Ronnie and I sat down and decided those people didn't actually come into my program for the lead up to the games, that they were eliminated from the circle of friends for that period of time because I didn't need any negativities around me. So I really, outside of Ronnie Dewhurst and Doc Toyne, I probably talked about it with people, but I didn't seek their input into decision-making.
We're with Raylene Boyle on our Legend series on Gold Coast Gold. The similarities between you and Catherine Freeman in Sydney in 1982 home games. You were the final baton bearer of the Queen's baton. It was the race of the games. Deke's win was fantastic and Tracy Wickham and others in the pool were tremendous. But this was the race. This was the one that everyone around Australia stopped for. Did you get that at the time? And what an overwhelming... I can't imagine how much pressure that would be.
Ronnie kept me away from pressure very well. We did talk about all of that, guiding me the path through it, making sure that I wasn't put under the pressure you mentioned that would make me make silly decisions when I was racing and maybe run that first 300 too hard and not be able to run the last 100. It all comes into play. But, yeah, I didn't realise the significance in Australia. I didn't realise that cars would stop at traffic lights and not move, whether they had a green or red light. The stories I've heard really astounded me. Really astounded. I still have people whenever I travel, and I travel a fair bit with breast cancer stuff, I still have people everywhere I go saying, oh, I didn't recognise you, probably because of the grey hair, at least I got hair, but I recognised your voice. And they love it. They sit down, they say, we remember Brisbane. You know, it was just fantastic. And I'm not just talking about older people or people my age. I'm talking about kids who were probably 10 at the time say it, and it blows me away. It makes me feel really warm inside, and it also makes me very proud to be an Australian. I've always been very proud to be an Australian, but also very proud that I actually had the opportunity to run that race, win it, and in a way say thank you to the Australian community that supported me for so many years.
Well, if you're listening to this, go and Google the 1982 Commonwealth Games 400, because a lot of the people, in fact, maybe the majority of the people listening to this, Raylene, weren't even born in 1982, 35 years ago. So for the young athletes that are and the older athletes that are listening, go and Google that and have a look at it, because it was a magnificent race. Your medal was presented by Betty Cuthbert. She was one of the ones out there presenting the medal. And I think at the time she said that you were the golden girl, and you might have said something back to her.
I think you've been reading Peter Fitzsimons.
Is that not true?
No.
Well, the story that he told is that you were out there, she presented the medal, she said to you that you're the golden girl, and you said there's only one golden girl, Betty, that's you. That's not true.
I don't recall that. And he also said that she got out of her chair and walked. I don't think she was in a chair back then. But, no, I think Dan Whitehead presented my medal, and he was the guy who organised and put the games together. I don't like to kill good stories, and it was a bloody good story in the paper that I read when Betty died, but I don't think that's right.
No, that's fine. That's good. Well, it's good to get it from the person who would know, and that's why I ask these questions. So that was the end of the Commonwealth Games experience, and what a career. But your career has been so much more than that since then.
You've forgotten the relay where I came.
We don't talk about those things.
Great race.
You became a coach for a little while. In fact, I can remember this because I used to share a house with Catherine, and you shipped her into shape. Didn't last very long, but I reckon you were a significant element in her success because you didn't take any rubbish, and she had no idea what to do as an elite athlete.
I think that was a bit of a setup with McAvaney and a couple of others. And it was never going to work because I was never a coach, and Catherine was always late to training, and she was carrying an injury when I did it, and I suggested she didn't go to the games that she was working towards, and I can't even remember what that was, but she went anyway. I think probably it bonded us as good friends. We're good friends. We're good mates, and we both work a little bit outside the athletic world. Kath's not that interested in being in the athletic world either. But she is one of the great people of the world coming out of sport. She's a very sensible, honest, truly caring young woman. She is just a nice young woman. Nice young woman.
How did your approach to life come about? Because I reckon I'm not sure if I've ever met a straighter shooter than you. And there's plenty of straight shooters that I know. In fact, I've got a fair bit of it in me myself. But you don't take any rubbish. If something's crap, you'll say it's crap. You boycotted in 1980, and when everyone tried to convince you you shouldn't go, you stood up for that, and it wasn't the first or the last time. Where did that come from?
I think probably observation. You know, you observe so many people in today's world, and you look at them and you're going, is that really coming out of your mouth? You know, when you look in the mirror at home after you've had a shower, do you really say that to yourself? You really honestly believe it? And I just get sick of the rubbish that people say. I mean, I could never have been a politician, never, because, you know, Barnaby Joyce is pretty much a straight shooter, but I think still there's a bit of faux pas-ing and hiding of things in there. I just can't stand. I like to know where I stand, so I think people like to know where they stand with me. I can't see the point in working around a story.
Life's too short, and I have to say, Raylene, sometimes we've worried that your life might be too short, but you're still here and you're going strong, but it hasn't been easy.
No, it's been a pretty tough. It's 21 years now since my breast cancer diagnosis, and it wasn't so bad. It was probably 4 years later when I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer that I fell off the, you know, fell down the gurgler a bit and didn't cope and went into a terrible state of depression, and life did get pretty tough. And that was leading up to the Sydney Olympics. And not that it was going to upset my performance outside of pushing a wheelchair into the stadium. But, yeah, it was pretty tough then. And really, my life has been one of fairly poor health for a long time. The last episode was epilepsy 5 years ago, and that knocked me around as well. Made me stop working. I hated work. God, I was never put on this earth to work. But yeah, that knocked me around a lot. I spent a lot of time in hotel rooms on my own with the travelling around. You know what it's like. You travel around all the time and you spend a lot of time alone. And I got a bit nervous about that, so I stopped working. And also had a pacemaker put in at the same time. So I thought my heart and my head were telling me to relax a bit more.
But you're still here and you're fighting on, which we're all very thankful for. We lost Betty, of course, just recently, which was incredibly sad. Let's just talk quickly before we finish about the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. It's that home games experience that we all so love, and you're based in Queensland, in Budrum. Will you get to the games? Will you go? Will you get along and watch? You're not commentating anymore, sadly. You and Bruce are an unstoppable force. But are you looking forward to it?
I think it's going to be fantastic for the Gold Coast. You can't believe the buzz around Queensland, and I'm sure the buzz is around Australia, but I live there, so I know what the buzz is. I've got a friend who lives close by everything. She's got a lovely unit. She said if we want to go down and stay there, we're more than welcome. I don't think I could sit in a crowd situation. I would like to see Sally Pearson run. I've really respected her ability to come back from basically nothing. You know, shattered arm, falling over. I don't know how you can get back up and face hurdles. Different sprinting, you got, you know, you haven't got 10 things standing in front of you. I wouldn't mind seeing that and maybe having a look and checking out if there's any new talent coming through. But I'll pick and choose. There might be some corporates that invite me down there and I'll drive down, possibly. But I haven't made any decisions. I watch it closely on television and I just hope it's a great event to talent scout lots of kids to participate and get involved with our sport, because I think that basically is what it's for.
Just before we go, the last one, being elevated to a legend of Australian sport. Incredible.
It's an incredible honour to be standing up there with some of my mates, Margie Jackson and Herbie Elliott and John Landy, I think, is there, and a lot of the people that I love very much in this world and people who I do communicate with. I don't quite know what to say about it. I don't know whether I deserve it. I questioned whether I should accept it when it was offered to me. Even though I didn't say that to the people who were calling me, I spoke to a couple of people close to me and said, I don't quite know what to do here. Is it going to be pressure that I can't cope with? Do I really fit? You know, didn't win a gold medal, didn't hold a world record. But in the end, I was convinced that it was appropriate. So I feel very proud. It's funny when you retire, you'd know it. It's funny when you retire from sport, you think that you're never going to have that buzz again that you had when you're out there participating with the crowd on your side and stirring them up. I had that feeling again in Sydney when I was given the opportunity to push Betty into the stadium with the torch, and I feel very similar to that now. I feel very humbled, very honoured, and quite surprised and shocked, really. But I'm going to enjoy the moment.
As you should. When you look at great Australian athletes in athletics in particular, Shirley, Marge, Betty, Kathy, Raylene, we only need to know their first
name. Great names that are my mates. Kathy's, yeah.
We don't need to know their surnames because they're only known by their first name, and you're one of them. You are a legend of Australian sport. I'm privileged that I've been able to share commentary boxes with you and times with you and arguments with you and all of those things. You gave me my first free pair of shoes when you were at Nike. I love you, Raylene, and so does the rest of Australia. Thanks for joining us on Gold Coast Gold Legend Series.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
And that's it for this edition of Gold Coast Gold. A reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an edition. You can join us at Commonwealth Games Australia on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the news regarding the Australian team at the 2018 Gold Coast Games. Until next week, thanks for your company. Gold Coast Gold.